All right, folks, welcome to the deep dive. Have you ever felt like you're just spinning your wheels at work, like stuck in a routine, every day the same grind? Well, imagine that feeling, but you're actually a monkey. And the grind is literal.
That's a fantastic way to put it. That's exactly the world that J.R. Roberts creates in The Monkey State.
This book blew my mind. It's like Office Space meets Planet of the Apes with like a dash of philosophical mystery. We follow Claude, our main monkey, and he lives in this really controlled society called Tierra Libre.
And what I think is fascinating is how the author uses this like seemingly absurd premise to explore some really deep questions about freedom and conformity and like the search for meaning.
Right, so Claude's an inspector for the state. Sounds kind of important, but it's mostly just bureaucratic nonsense. He's drowning in paperwork, dealing with annoying coworkers.
Like Dubbert, the ultimate yes man, always trying to curry favor with the Hormigas, the state's enforcers.
Oof, Dubbert. Total suck-up. Anyway, Claude is starting to get this nagging sense that something's not right, that there's got to be more to life than just following the rules.
And this feeling is amplified by these recurring dreams that he has about this mysterious bird. It's like a symbol of something beyond his limited world, something calling him towards something else.
Exactly. And then there's Punk, this substance that allows monkeys to access these deeper thoughts and memories. It's not explicitly stated what it is, but it seems to function like a kind of psychedelic drug or ancient ritual that unlocks these hidden parts of their minds.
What's interesting is that punk is seen as incredibly dangerous by the state. It's labeled as monkey business, which is basically anything that challenges their control.
Because independent thought is a threat to a totalitarian regime. Makes sense in a twisted way. But for Claude, it's like punk opens a door to a whole new way of seeing things.
And it's through these punk-induced experiences that he starts to question the state's narrative, the official story that they've been feeding everyone.
Oh, and speaking of conflicting narratives, let's talk about Claude's sister Tia. She's a devout acolyte to the Monvita, the all-powerful leader of Tierra Libre.
Talk about family drama. They have these incredibly tense interactions, especially because their father Kama is caught in the middle.
It's like they represent two completely opposite ways of dealing with this really oppressive system. Tia embraces it, climbs the ladder, while Claude is increasingly suspicious and wants to break free.
And their dynamic really highlights the book's exploration of individual choice within a restrictive society. How much are you willing to compromise to fit in? At what point does conformity become complicity?
Deep stuff, right? And it gets even more complicated when you factor in the timber shortage that's plaguing the tribe.
This shortage leads to harsher working conditions for the treepers, the monkeys who actually harvest the timber. They're basically the backbone of the society, but they're treated like second-class citizens.
It's a classic case of exploitation, right? The townies who live in more developed areas like Hustleton benefit from the treepers' labor but don't want to acknowledge the cost.
Exactly. And this economic inequality further fuels Claude's growing sense of unease. He starts to see the cracks in the system, the ways in which the state is benefiting the few at the expense of the many.
Okay, so we've got this intriguing setup. A disillusioned monkey inspector, a mysterious bird haunting his dreams, a mind-altering substance labeled as dangerous, and a society grappling with ecological and social unrest. Where does the author take us from here?
Well, one of Claude's first assignments as an inspector takes him to the dump, a massive waste processing facility, not exactly a glamorous location.
Sounds lovely. What kind of insights does he glean from sorting through trash?
It's actually there that he meets Tom Huckbane, the supervisor of the dump, who turns out to be a much more complex character than Claude initially expects.
I'm sensing a don't judge a book by its cover situation here. What makes Huckbane so interesting?
He's surprisingly philosophical and well-read. He has this whole collection of banned books that he shares with Claude Books that offer alternative perspectives on the state's history and ideology.
Ooh, that's dangerous. So he's basically a rebel hiding in plain sight.
Exactly. And it's through Huckbane that Claude learns about the Refuge, a secret society dedicated to preserving knowledge and questioning the state's control.
Now things are getting juicy. A secret society. Sounds like Claude's about to stumble down a very intriguing rabbit hole.
He is. And this encounter with Huckbane and the discovery of the Refuge mark a major turning point in his journey. He's no longer just questioning things internally, he's now connecting with others who share his doubts and desire for something more. What's really intriguing is how the author parallels Claude's internal journey with the external challenges facing Tierra Libre. The timber shortage isn't just an environmental problem. It becomes a symbol of the state's unsustainable practices and its disregard for the well-being of its citizens.
That's a great point. It's like the crumbling rainforest mirrors the cracks in the state's facade, So how does Claude navigate this increasingly complex and dangerous world?
Well, he's caught between his growing awareness of the state's corruption and his fear of the consequences of rebellion. Remember, monkey business isn't just a cute phrase. It carries real weight in this society.
Right. Any deviation from the norm is met with swift and often brutal punishment. We see that early on with the incident at the dump where a worker is punished for simply questioning a supervisor.
Exactly. So Claude has to be careful. He can't just openly challenge the state, especially with his sister Tia becoming more and more entrenched in the system.
Talk about a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
His own sister is basically part of the machine, he's starting to question. How does that tension play out?
It creates some incredibly charged moments between them. There's this one scene where Claude tries to talk to Tia about his doubts, about what he's learning from Huckbane and the refuge.
And how does she react? Does she at least listen to him?
She dismisses him completely. She accuses him of being naive, of romanticizing a past that never existed. It's like she's completely bought into the state's propaganda.
That's got to be heartbreaking for Claude. It's like he's losing his sister to this ideology that he finds increasingly oppressive.
It is. And it highlights the insidious nature of control. It can seep into personal relationships, divide families, turn loved ones against each other.
So what happens next? Does Claude just give up and resign himself to a life of quiet dissent?
Not quite. Remember those mysterious dreams he's been having about the bird? They start to intensify, and he becomes convinced that they're pointing him towards something important.
Okay, so the bird is more than just a symbol. It's like a guide, a beacon, leading him towards something. But towards what?
That's the central mystery of the book. The bird is never fully explained, but it seems to represent a kind of escape, a way out of the confines of Tierra Libre.
Which brings us to Maya, the mythical place that's whispered about in hushed tones. What do we actually know about Maya?
Very little is explicitly stated. It's described as a world beyond the mist, a place where monkeys lived in harmony with nature before the rise of the state.
So it's like a lost paradise, a potential alternative to the rigid control of Tierra Libre.
Exactly. But whether it actually exists or whether it's just a hopeful fantasy is left ambiguous.
I like that the author doesn't give us easy answers. It forces you to grapple with the same questions that Claude is wrestling with. Is Maya real? Is it worth risking everything to find it?
And this ambiguity becomes even more pronounced when Claude gets summoned to meet the Monvita herself.
Wait, the Monvita? The all-powerful leader of Tierra Libre. How does that happen?
It's implied that she's been watching him, that she's aware of his growing dissatisfaction and his connection to the refuge.
Ooh, that's chilling.
Mm.
So this is a bad thing, right? She's going to punish him for his rebellious thoughts.
It's not that straightforward. The Monvita is a master manipulator. Instead of punishing Claude, she offers him a new assignment, one that she claims will be more interesting.
I bet. What's the catch?
She wants him to conduct private inspections for her, basically acting as her eyes and ears in the more unconventional corners of Tierra Libre.
So she's making him a spy.
Essentially.
Huh.
And this puts Claude in a moral dilemma. On the one hand, he loathes the idea of serving the state, of being complicit in their control. But on the other hand, he's also curious. He wants to see what's really going on beneath the surface.
That's a tough call. What does he choose?
He accepts the assignment, but with a sense of defiance. He's playing the Monvita's game, but he's also using it as an opportunity to gather information to find out more about Maya and the refuge's plans.
So it's like he's playing a double game sneaky. Where does this new role take him?
One of his first stops is the penitentiary, the state's prison. And it's here that he witnesses the true brutality of the system. The punishments are harsh, even for minor infractions.
That sounds grim. Give us an example. What kind of things are people being punished for?
He sees a monkey being tortured for simply missing a day of work. It's a stark reminder of the price of disobedience in this society.
That's awful. It really underscored the oppressive nature of this regime.
Right, and it further solidifies Claude's determination to escape. He realizes that he can't just stand by and watch as others suffer under the system.
So his motivation is shifting from personal disillusionment to a more altruistic desire to help others break free.
Exactly. He's not just running away from something. He's running towards a better future, both for himself and for the other monkeys trapped in Tierra Libre.
And how does this newfound purpose manifest in his actions?
He becomes more active in the refuge. He starts collecting information about Maya, mapping out escape routes, and recruiting other monkeys who are disillusioned with the state.
It sounds like he's becoming a leader, a catalyst for change. But it's got to be dangerous work, right?
Incredibly dangerous. He's constantly looking over his shoulder, aware that one wrong move could expose him and everyone involved.
And let's not forget his sister, Tia. She's still rising through the ranks of the acolytes. That's got to create some serious conflict, right?
It does, and it comes to a head during a particularly tense encounter at the school where they both used to be students.
Ooh, that's loaded with symbolism. Going back to the place where they were indoctrinated with the state's ideology, what happens?
The school has become even more rigid and controlled than it was when they were kids. There's this emphasis on rote memorization, obedience, and conformity.
It's like they're trying to mold the next generation into perfect little drones.
Exactly. And Claude sees how the system is crushing the students' creativity, their individuality. It reinforces his belief that escape is the only way to truly break free.
So what does he do? Does he try to rebel against the system right then and there?
He's tempted to, but he knows that would be reckless. Instead, he focuses on his investigation, trying to find clues about Maya. And he starts to notice something strange about one of the teachers, Mr. Musk.
Mr. Musk? What's so strange about him?
He seems out of place. Like, he doesn't fully believe the propaganda he's teaching. He keeps making subtle mistakes, saying things that hint at a different way of seeing the world.
Could Mr. Musk be a secret refuger?
It's possible, but Claude has to be cautious. He can't trust anyone blindly, especially with the stakes getting higher and higher.
This is getting good.
Yeah.
We've got a clandestine meeting with the Mon Vita, a horrifying glimpse into the state's prison system, and a potential ally hiding in plain sight. What happens next?
Well, after his visit to the school, Claude decides to check in on Caro, his old friend from the SI department who's recently retired.
Oh, right. Caro. He was always dreaming about kicking back and enjoying the good life. How's retirement treating him?
Not as well as he'd hoped. The retirement village is depicted as this bleak, sterile place where the elderly monkeys are heavily medicated and seemingly kept in the state of docility.
That's depressing. So much for the golden years.
Right. And it's through this visit that Claude starts to understand the true cost of conformity. The state basically uses you up and then discards you when you're no longer useful.
That's a sobering realization. That's a heavy burden to carry. So what happens next? Does Caro's death make him more determined to escape? Or does it make him question everything?
Well, it definitely adds a layer of urgency to his mission. He knows that time is running out, both for himself and for Tierra Libre.
Right. Because the blue moon is approaching, and that's when the refuge is planning their escape, isn't it?
Exactly. And this leads to a series of incredibly tense chapters as Claude tries to juggle his investigation, his increasingly strained relationship with Tia, and his growing commitment to the refuge's plan.
So the blue moon is approaching, tensions are rising, and Claude is stuck in this impossible situation. What's the plan for actually getting out of Tierra Libre? It's not like they can just book a flight on Expedia, right?
Definitely not. Remember that poisonous Agamon River we talked about? The one that forms the southern border of Tierra Libre? Well, that's their only way out.
But it's poisonous. They can't just swim across. What, are they crazy?
That's what makes the escape so daring. The refuge has discovered a secret, this massive sleeper vine that stretches across the river. It's like something out of an adventure movie.
Wow, a giant vine across a poisonous river? Sounds risky. Mm-hmm. But I guess desperate times call for desperate measures. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, just about everything. First, they have to reach the vine, which means sneaking through the rainforest, avoiding the hormigas, and evading the howlers, which are basically the state's attack dog.
The howlers. Those things were terrifying. They're like the stuff of nightmares.
They're definitely formidable. And as if that wasn't enough, there's a betrayal within the group.
Wait, what? Who betrays them? I thought they were all in this together.
It's implied to be Dodge and Candace, this couple who initially seemed really gung-ho about the escape. But at the last minute, they try to slip away, which alerts the hormigas.
Classic case of cold feet, huh? So what happens? Do the hormigas catch them?
They do. And unfortunately, Muskie, the nervous economics professor, ends up getting captured as well.
Poor Muskie. He seemed like such a gentle soul. I was rooting for him.
He was a sympathetic character for sure. So now it's down to just Claude Trent and a handful of others, including Maud, the skilled fighter from the refuge.
Maud. She was a total badass. I loved her character. What happens to her during the escape?
She plays a pivotal role. As they're trying to reach the vine, they're ambushed by the hormigas, and Maud gets shot with a poisoned arrow.
Oh, no. Is she okay?
It's not looking good. But even though she's severely injured, she manages to buy Claude and Trent some time by distracting the hormigas. She's incredibly brave and selfless.
But a hero. She sacrifices herself for the greater good.
Exactly. The book doesn't explicitly say whether she survives, but her actions allow Claude and Trent to get closer to the vine.
So it's down to the wire now.
And
it's just them against the whole might of the state. How do they manage to pull it off?
Well, this is where Joan Tsai, the enigmatic leader of the refuge, makes a dramatic entrance.
Joan, I thought she was staying behind. Wasn't she coordinating everything from the shadows?
She was. But she shows up at this critical moment, wielding a mysterious power that's been hinted at throughout the book, but never fully explained.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing. What kind of power?
It's described as a kind of elemental magic, maybe connected to the Luvei, this life force that flows through everything in Tierra Libre.
So she's like a mystical warrior fighting for freedom with the power of nature itself.
Exactly. And she unleashes this incredible blast of energy that distracts the howlers and gives Claude and Trent a chance to make the final swing across the Agumon River.
Talk about a clutch play. So they actually make it. They're beyond the mist.
Claude does. He lands on the other side, battered and bruised, but free. We don't know for sure if Trent makes it across. The book ends with Claude catching one last glimpse of Joan battling the Hormigas, and then he's plunged into the unknown.
Wow, what an ending. So many questions left unanswered. Does Trent survive? What happens to Joan? What's on the other side of the mist? And most importantly, if you were Claude, would you risk it all for a chance at freedom, even if you didn't know what was beyond the mist? Let us know in the comments below.
And if you haven't read The Monkey State yet, we highly recommend checking it out. It's a unique and unforgettable story that will stay with you long after you finish the last page.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, keep questioning, keep exploring, and never stop seeking the truth, no matter how elusive it may seem. Until next time, stay curious.